Welcome back. I'm Weston Labar, Chief Strategy Officer with Cargomatic. We're here today for our podcast, People on the Move, to have a fireside chat about all things environmental regulations in California with Chris Shimoda of the California Trucking Association and Matt Schrapp of the Harbor Trucking Association. Chris, Matt, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Weston.
Chris, why don't we get started with you? Do you want to give our listeners a little bit of a background, who you are, what you do? I mean, I've had the distinct pleasure of working with both of you, and I'll tell anybody who asks, you know, who's the best people in the industry on air quality and trucking regulations. I always say, you got to talk to Chris Shimoda at the CTA. And if you're talking about ports, you got to talk to Matt Schrapp at the HTA. So why don't you give the folks a little bit of a background on you and what you do and what you're doing for the industry?
Yeah, absolutely. So Chris Shimoda, I'm Senior Vice President of Government Affairs for the California Trucking Association. CTA is the nation's largest statewide association representing the trucking industry. And we're the California partner of the American Trucking Association's 50th Federation. And I've been with the CTA for 15 years now. I like to joke, I've done every job in the office except for janitorial, and sometimes even that. But my current position as Senior Vice President, I'm responsible for overseeing our government affairs team, which is now four people strong with a couple of contract lobbyists. I myself am our in-house registered lobbyist, and so I deal with our California legislature on a daily basis. I also have a portfolio that includes the California Air Resources Board and other regulatory agencies around the state. And that's actually what I've been focused on primarily for the last, I'd say, 12 years at this point. So thanks for having me. Looking forward to chatting about what's on the horizon.
Yeah, California Trucking Association, the leading advocate for truckers throughout the state, no matter what sector of trucking you're in. Cargomatic, proud members of the CTA, and also proud members of the Harbor Trucking Association, where I get the pleasure of sitting on the board. And Matt, thank you for joining us. Why don't you give the listeners a little background about who you are and what you do? You're quite vocal out there these days.
You know, Weston, I appreciate the opportunity here. And, you know, it's always great to have such fantastic partners like Cargomatic as part of our overall member portfolio. And, you know, I've been in and around trucking about 20 years or so. My first job was actually with the California Trucking Association. That's the first place I met Chris. Right when he started, I was slowly finishing my tenure there. So I worked for the California Trucking Association. Then for about 11 years, I worked for a company known as the Velocity Vehicle Group that specifically focused on helping fleets understand what their grant opportunities are for truck replacement, as well as regulatory policy guidance. I also acted as sort of our advocate for our corporate arm here with Velocity. And for the last year and, geez, about 18, 19 months now, I've been as CEO of the Harbor Trucking Association. My main focus really is anything having to do with heavy-duty trucks ingressing and egressing seaports across the West Coast. And as you know, Weston, it's all the way from San Diego to Seattle, Tacoma, as we like to say. So we've been growing, and there's no shortage of issues here for us in California especially. And one of the things that I've been working on since, you know, my career started was environmental quality issues in California. When I touched base first with those issues was a fellow for the California State Senate. Then, of course, my time with CTA right before Chris took over. My unfortunate reality was having to deal with the Air Resources Board on a daily basis. And now that's in Chris's purview. So we have great partnership with California Trucking Association, as well as the American Trucking Association and other trucking associations throughout the country. And I'll tell you, I'm just really looking forward to the discussion here and trying to get some more light shined into this dark place here in California that we are called the California Air Resources Board Regulatory Policy.
Yeah. And Matt, you're doing a fantastic job. You're definitely a step up from the guy you replaced. I don't know why that guy was ever there. But Why don't we shift gears a little bit, because there is so much conversation about the California and the environmental regulations that they keep bringing to the table. What's feasible, right? What's achievable now versus what is basically a pie in the sky or a longer term aspirational goal? And Chris, you know, maybe you can get us going from a broad perspective. You know, there's so many different air quality regulators out there, from the California Air Resources Board to the different air quality management districts to the actual port authorities now in certain instances. Give us an overview of what that quagmire looks like and really what we're up against.
Yeah, absolutely, Weston. And, you know, I think I'll start with, you know, when I first came on board with CTA and worked with Matt, the Air Resources Board had just adopted something called the California Truck and Bus Regulation, which was at the time probably the most aggressive air quality regulation that the trucking industry had faced to that point in history. That was essentially a requirement for trucking fleets of all sizes in the state to move to the EPA 2010 model year truck, which I know at least your trucking audience members will know was the cleanest available standard at the time. Diesel particulate filters, selective catalytic reduction technology that basically eliminated diesel soot from the air and reduced smog-forming pollutants such as NOx, which mixes with other pollutants to create ozone, which creates smog issues in Southern California. Those pollutants were reduced by over 90%, and was a very painful transition. I'm sure that both your carrier members and shipper members dealt with the fallout from that rule. However, what we're seeing on, you know, the near-term horizon is something completely different than anything that I know I've seen in my 15 years at the association, where in April, April either the 27th or 28th, the California Air Resources Board, who is, I would argue, the most powerful environmental regulatory agency in the country, due to several factors, including the fact that they are the only agency in the country other than the federal EPA who can set these type of standards pursuant to a waiver by federal EPA to allow California to do that. They are on the cusp of adopting something called the Advanced Clean Fleets Regulation, which is the nation's first zero emission requirement for the trucking industry. And it gets a little convoluted, but I'll try to, you know, sum it up by saying that if you are a fleet with more than 50 trucks, if you do greater than $50 million revenue, and operate a single truck in the state of California, and that's a truck as low as 8,500 gross vehicle weight rating and above, so your classic Sprinter van size all the way up to Class 8s, or if you are a fleet of any size operating at intermodal ports and rail yards within the state, there is a rule, again, going to the board in April, that is going to require you to transition to zero emission technologies, either battery electric or hydrogen fuel cell, as early as January 1st, 2024, which is, you know, about 10 months away at this point. And I'll tell your audience just straight away, I do expect that this regulation is going to be adopted. Where we are in the process at the moment is going through amendments to that regulation, which I expect to be released to the general public by mid-March. This rule is going to go into effect. And so great time to be having this discussion, a great time for your audience to get up to speed on what the state is proposing to be adopted in less than a year, and happy to, you know, dive a little deeper into some of our concerns. And I know Harbor Trucking Association shares, you know, pretty much the identical viewpoint that we are going to have a very challenging time meeting the timelines that have been set out by the state.
Yeah. You know, Chris, that was going to be my follow-up, is that for many years now since the whole concept of transition to zero emissions has been discussed, essentially after they passed the last Clean Trucks program, there's been a lot of major concerns, everything from weight restrictions to the availability of the equipment to infrastructure to support it. And I want to clarify one thing. You don't have to transition your current fleet cradle to grave, but any new incremental equipment you're going to bring on needs to be zero emissions. Did I get that right?
That's correct. And I'll, again, try to sum it up as briefly as possible, that the proposal, both on the non-port and port parts of the industry, is that after January 1st, 2024, any new or used truck that you want to bring into either the state, in the case of it's called the high priority fleets part of the regulation, or into a port or rail yard on the drayage piece of the rule, is going to have to be zero emissions. There's some nuance there. Outside of the port context, you could look at, for instance, a range extended hybrid, something with an all electric range, that's going to be allowable outside of the ports. Going into the ports, everything is going to have to be zero emission after January 1st, 2024, if it is a new addition to your fleet. Your existing fleet, as it stood pre-January 1st, 2024, is going to be able to operate up to what are called the SB1 useful life limits, which we were involved with getting into the law back in 2017. Which is, let's say you have a model year 2020 truck that you just acquired. You are going to be able to operate that truck in the port context, for instance, until at least January 1st, 2033, because the useful life limits are the later of 13 years from the model year of your engine or 800,000 miles on the vehicle, so whichever comes later. No matter the mileage, under no circumstances can you operate that vehicle beyond 18 years. So there is some protection for existing equipment. And I know folks in the industry have been responding to the truck and bus rule and upgrading equipment to meet that final deadline in 2023. And so you can rest assured that at a minimum, the trucks that you just purchased to become compliant with the old California rules are still going to be able to operate up to those useful life limits.
Yeah. So Matt, you represent the port truckers out there. There's no infrastructure in and around the ports. Can't get access to the equipment. What does this mean for capacity that's available throughout the nation's largest seaport complex and the state that has the most goods traversing its international seaports?
You know, time will tell, Weston, to be honest. Right now, at the end of last year, as Chris had alluded to, with the full implementation of the truck and bus rule, we saw 7 through 9 engines and earlier engines, and some with some retrofit instances, being retired from service in California. They weren't supposed to get DMV registration. So here locally, LA Long Beach, at least, we saw about, towards the end of the year, just over 2,000 trucks that were in active service, about 2,300, which was down from a very large number starting in the beginning of the year. Really, when we started 2022, over close to 30% of all loaded container moves were moved by those particular engine model years. As we geared up towards the end of the year, folks knew that the rule was coming. They turned over equipment. They went and tried to take advantage of some of the exemption pathways to get a little bit more time. And suffice it to say, we are now in such a downswing of cargo volumes that we really haven't felt the effect of removing effectively 10 to 20% of that total capacity by the time we finally got to December of 2022. And there are, just for the record, there are two public chargers in the Port of Long Beach. Right now, there are 20,000 trucks that are registered to do business in the LA Long Beach port complex. You have another about 7,000 up in Oakland, where there isn't necessarily any public-facing charging infrastructure. So as these rules kick in, as that useful life that Chris was talking about, that 13 years up to 18 years or 800,000 miles, whichever, whatever comes first, essentially what that looks like when the reporting requirements for the drayage will start in 2025. We could see another 2,000 trucks easily removed from the system, just even here locally in LA Long Beach. So at that point in time, if we're back to those same type of cargo volumes that we saw closing out 21 and into early 22, we could have a serious problem relative to capacity, because you just cannot source the electric charging infrastructure. Especially the trucks are a less of a challenge to procure, besides the fact that they cost about $500,000 out the door, you're still needing to charge it somewhere. So time will tell. Unfortunately, if we all had crystal balls, we'd probably be doing something different, as I like to say, but nevertheless, you know, we'll see how this all shakes out. There's no shortage of challenges with the rule. And, you know, you use those, the two terms earlier, sensible and feasible. That really isn't in the lexicon for the state of California when developing regulatory policy for the trucking industry. So we'll just have to see exactly how this pans out.
So if the infrastructure is not available, and I'm guessing there's still an issue in getting the equipment, right? As you said, they're becoming less of a challenge, but still very difficult to be able to get it. And let's be honest, the average size of a truck fleet, six trucks, and the folks that are really getting this equipment are larger fleets that are making larger orders, right? So if you're a small drayman or you're a small fleet doing any type of trucking, what are the safeguards you have? I know in the past, there's been discussions about being able to use purchase orders for things like the Clean Trucks Program that the Ports of LA Long Beach implemented. Like, what is the safeguard for trucking companies? We work with so many small fleets as part of our marketplace and our brokerage division. What do we do to help those folks, you know, in this transition process in such a way where they don't get put out of business?
So a couple different pathways. On the one hand, you know, information is critical. And as Chris had mentioned, you know, with the regulations imminent adoption towards the end of April, there's an opportunity to get engaged, make some public comment, become aware of what the rules expectations are. There are also grants out there that are available for both the vehicle and infrastructure, both above ground, the charging pedestal itself, as well as in-ground infrastructure. Of course, nowhere near enough to cover the amount of vehicles that will need to potentially be turned over as early as 2025 or for any additional capacity in 2024. And you're right, it is the larger, more well-capitalized fleets who are deploying zero emissions technology. I think we're at about 63 zero emission vehicles that are registered into the Ports Drayage Truck Registry database. Three of those are hydrogen fuel cells. And that's just down here in LA Long Beach. The only safeguards really within the rule, and which is relative, pretty much very close to what is considered under the high priority fleets exemptions, if you will, for delays, either in infrastructure or vehicle delivery, that you can apply. If it's a vehicle delivery, you apply, you demonstrate that you're unable to take delivery by the time your older vehicle, who's reaching its end of its useful life, prior to that expiring, you need to at least have, you know, and identify at least 1 year ahead of time that you've placed this order for this vehicle. If it doesn't show up within that year after your existing vehicle has exceeded its useful life, then you would get more time on that older truck past its useful life consideration. And then on the infrastructure side, they will allow you for 3 years of delay, provided you can demonstrate that you started at least a year ahead of time, I believe so, prior to that, those regulatory deadlines for those trucks coming up relative to useful life. You can get extensions for 3 years, with one caveat, that you're expected to deploy the minimum amount of vehicles that the utility can support. So you have this situation where folks are trying to electrify their facilities. They bring in the utility. The utility says, well, we need to put a new transformer in, or we need to do some further downstream repairs before we're able to deliver you the total amount that you need for your load profile. They might be able to deliver a smaller amount of energy. And according to the regulation, that you would need to deploy those minimum amount of trucks. We don't have all the exact details, because it seems that they cut and paste from the high priority fleets to the drayage section. And although they're under the same umbrella, they have two different pathways for compliance, because this infrastructure delay is only for folks who are going to deploy their own infrastructure. If you're one of those small fleets that maybe just shares a yard with somebody or is occupying a location that has a landlord who might not be amenable to tearing up the parking lot to putting in charging infrastructure, then you are pretty much SOL, as the old saying goes. There is no delay for a fleet who would need to exclusively rely on public facing or retail charging infrastructure. It's only for that depot charging. So again, the regulatory relief, it's not, you know, leaves a lot to be desired, to say the least. But on the other side of that coin, there is educational opportunities for people who do want to try to pursue this. There is a bit money that's available now. While it can't fund everything, it can take a portion of that vehicle cost and some of that infrastructure cost and lower it significantly. So that really, and you know, I look forward to hear what Chris has to say, but there's really not a whole lot of flexibility that's built into the reg for off ramps, especially for drayage carriers who are going to rely on retail charging infrastructure.
Yeah. And before Chris jumps in, I wanted to add a couple things to this. First, this sounds like a straightforward anti-small business regulation through and through, because the folks that most need the assistance are probably not the ones that are going to have the ability to get access to it. But, you know, we talk about funding and grant funding. And Chris, as you add on to what Matt just said, the governor came out. I mean, we've got a huge budget shortfall, obviously. In the most recent budget, I think I saw that he was cutting out clean truck funding by what, $85 million. And that was just a news article that I had read several weeks ago. Where are we in the funding mechanism of this? Because, you know, some organizations like the Ports of LA and Long Beach have their clean truck fund, which is self-generated by, quote unquote, the dirty non-compliant trucks. And that goes directly back to different programs for the trucking community to take advantage of. But there's all these different programs, HVIP, you know, you've got programs through AQMD, you've got programs through CARB. Like, where do people go, and will there be enough money? How is this all going to play out?
So it's complicated, to say the least. And I'd agree with Matt's assessment that there's not going to be enough money to go around. And for years now, the discussion within the ARB and within the administration has been, we know we don't have enough money to pay for this transition. And so, you know, there's a couple of different things. I would, you know, if you are eligible and you are in a position where you are going to be moving forward with a purchase, by all means, look into HVIP, look into the Carl Moyer program. The clean truck fee at the port, my understanding is that they're going to be working with both the ARB and AQMD to administer those funds. So that's going to be another source of funding. But the real issue is, I want to let your, you know, smaller business listeners know, you're not alone in this boat. I've talked to some of the Fortune 50 on their plans for making this transition, and nobody has figured it out. This is, you know, sort of the brand new frontier that everybody's learning a lot about what this technology can or cannot do, where the pinch points and constraints are. And the real issue here is, I'll say very specifically, on February the 13th at an ARB workshop that was recorded, I believe, and, you know, we should be able to validate this. I asked point blank the staff at the ARB who is responsible for tracking this sort of thing. Okay, so given, I think Matt is 100% accurate, the vast majority of the port trucking fleet is not going to be bringing projects into a depot, which is the more ideal situation. They're going to be relying on some sort of publicly available infrastructure, and our estimate on what we need by 2025, which is less than 2 years away, is 200 megawatts worth of charging. And to give your audience an idea of what that means, you know, for those that are not electrical engineers, 200 megawatts is enough to power a small city. You know, a megawatt worth of power is about, let's call it 800 to 1,000 households worth of electricity. So, you know, roughly 200,000 households worth of electricity needs to be stood up in less than 2 years. And what I've learned through this process is the time horizon for getting those sort of projects put in place, it is not a year or two. It is upwards of 7 to 10 years and more than that, due to the fact that the next time you're driving around your town, if you see Something that looks like, wow, what is that? Is that a power plant? There's all this electrical equipment. You'll see them around every town. That's a substation. Basically takes the high voltage electricity off of transmission lines, which are coming from power plants, and steps it down to a usable voltage for your household appliances and your everyday needs in a home. One of those costs tens of millions of dollars and takes a very long time to permit and build. And what I've been told through this process is basically anytime we exceed roughly 20 megawatts for a project, which is going to happen all the time in the electrified trucking space, you're going to trigger a substation needing to be constructed. And so that is really the concern is, I would encourage fleets that are in the position to, look into whether or not this technology can work for you. By all means, take those steps. You need to reach out to your local utility. You need to understand your duty cycle and what, how you're going to need to use these vehicles and then tailor your charging strategies around that. But if you are not in that position, the unfortunate reality is the Air Resources Board did not exempt you from this regulation. No matter the fact of you not being able to plug in the truck they expect you to buy, that is not a valid excuse for non-compliance. And so, aside from, it's a great thing that the industry is making strides towards deploying more zero emission technologies. There's members of the association who have been trying to do this since the 90s. I've seen some of those pilot projects, and they were abandoned a long time ago for lack of feasibility. This is really taking things up a notch to where there's just basic issues of feasibility that have gone completely unaddressed, and that unfortunately I would say for the small businesses who are not going to be able to build their own projects, you're reliant upon somebody coming along and standing up this infrastructure, and the amount that is needed is so staggering. I don't know who's going to do it at this point in time. And I don't think their resources board knows for that matter.
Yeah. So it sounds like lots of good news. Equipment's not available, and what is available is very expensive. We've got tons and tons of energy available to the point where we have rolling brownouts on hot days and we're told to turn off our air conditioning and our appliances. And you're just talking about the need, Chris, I want to clarify, to power the trucks. That doesn't include the terminals that are going electric and the floating cities that are plugging in that we call the container vessels and all the other things. It's not like there's a one objective here of just we need this for the trucks. There's an incremental effect on top of it of everything else that needs to plug in. And at a time when, correct me if I'm wrong, but we're decommissioning and not rebuilding power plants in the state, and there's no source of reliable energy that can power certain cities, again, when we have grid overload on hot days. So, again, this seems like compartmentalized government. That would be my opinion. When you've got California Air Resources Board, they have, or the AQMD, right? They have one objective. They're a single focus agency. And maybe you can weigh in on this. Where do the other agencies involved, the PUC, CalISO, the CEC, the Energy Commission, where do they weigh in on this? Because they play such a huge role. The big thing is you talked about the decade-long process to put these substations in. We also forget we have CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act here, and it's almost impossible to get certain things permitted, as there have been discussion from the governor's office about exemptions from CEQA and or a streamlined permitting process. And is there something that can be done and I know I'm throwing a lot at you here, but is there something that can be done at the legislative level, or is that a non-starter? Because at the end of the day, you have a regulator, and the only way, my understanding, you can override CARB is to have legislation that what CARB's doing would conflict with, and or have the governor step in because he appoints all the people.
Yeah, I mean, the role that these other agencies are playing is, I'd say two things. Number one, the Energy Commission has been tasked with doing an assessment on the amount of chargers that need to be deployed to support the advanced clean fleets and trucks rules broadly. And their assessment is that by, you know, like just looking at the deployments by 2035, which is a small fraction of what will ultimately be deployed in the state under these regulations, we need to put up around 300 DC fast chargers every single week between now and 2035 to support the trucks. For context, the Energy Commission has stated we're doing around 14 DC fast charger installations a week right now to support the light duty passenger market. So we need a 30-fold increase essentially to meet the pace at which these chargers are going to need to be put in place. And the tension there is that the Energy Commission does a report called the IPER. For those who don't live in electricity land, probably never heard of this before. I didn't until several years ago. But what the IPER does is it actually forecasts the additional generation and infrastructure needs of the state. And the investor-owned utilities are actually only allowed to build out to that forecast that is done by this agency. And as recently as the last one that was performed, they are not planning for CARB's regulations. Now, hopefully that is being smoothed out and those changes are going to be made so that at a minimum, the investor-owned utilities are allowed to do the build out to support this massive new demand that is coming online. The overlay on top of that is that the Public Utilities Commission's role as a regulator is really to oversee investor-owned utilities to make sure that those investments that they're making in capital, because that's how they make their money, is basically approved or guaranteed profit margin above capital expenditures that they make. So they have a strong incentive to build or overbuild, and then the ratepayers get stuck with that bill. So their oversight role as a regulator is basically to act as sort of like the speed governor, so to speak, of the investor-owned utilities overbuilding. And so I think that everybody is just now coming to the realization of what is truly being proposed. And I'm glad you brought up shore power for ships. There is building decarbonization, which is basically getting rid of natural gas appliances. That's going to be a huge new demand from fully electrified buildings. You have the light duty passenger car internal combustion ban coming in 2035. It's going to be another competing part of the electricity use in California that we're going to be competing directly against for time, attention, energy, engineering, construction. And there's a real question as far as, are we going to be on pace when the right hand doesn't seem to talk to the left hand? And there is just a downplaying of what is coming down the pipe, where let me give you an example. So there's a lot of attention being paid to the Tesla Semi right now, which is, the specs have not been fully released. I'm guessing it's in the neighborhood of a megawatt hour sized battery. And they're also talking about megawatt charging speed. So that 1,000 households worth of electricity I just told you about, one single charger would put roughly 1,000 households worth of electricity through that charger in an hour. So it would let you charge that semi in 1 hour. So that's good. We can get in and out relatively quickly. However, if you look, you brought up CAISO, they're the ones who actually monitor the status of the grid and electricity use in the state. If you look on CAISO's website right now, 2 o'clock on a fairly cold February day in California, the state is probably running around like 25 to 30,000 megawatts worth of electricity. So if we were to just go out and buy a bunch of Tesla semis, plug them into these megawatt chargers, it would take only 25 to 30,000 trucks charging simultaneously to equal the entire state's demand for electricity at the current moment. And we've got more than 2 million commercial vehicles operating throughout the state. So, again, I don't know that our air quality regulators or our energy regulators, for that matter, fully appreciate, what they have proposed with respect to You know, just last year, the governor had to extend the life of Diablo Canyon, a nuclear power plant in the Santa Barbara area, 5 years due to the fact that we do not have sufficient overall electricity to serve the state's needs. So huge, huge questions to come. And, you know, at some point, all of this stuff is going to come to a head because of, you know, quite frankly, poor planning and coordination.
Yeah, I was just going to say, eventually the science is going to catch up with all of this, right? And you're going to have to answer tough questions. And when you have a government that's not aligned, really, or doesn't have a strategy that aligns, it makes it very difficult for folks who even want to comply. And, you know, I wanted to take this time because for the motor carriers out there and even the affiliates, like these two organizations are the ones that keep you in business, right? They're fighting for your right to be able to move the nation's economy quite literally. And in order to continue to do that, we need to be competitive. And I think it's a great time to maybe segue without going through any insider baseball. What are the CTA and the HTA doing other than going and having the meetings to help try to preserve some level of sanity? I know the CTA, you've been the leaders when it comes to state issues and challenge, you know, lobbying the Hill, taking things to court, doing whatever needs to happen to try to at least bring some practicality into the decision making where there is none. And I know the HTA is out there. You're doing some great things, Matt, around even your zero emissions, you know, what are you calling them? Drive-bys? What are they? Fleet testers? I forget what you guys are calling. Ride and drives? Ride and drive? I got it. Not drive-bys. So you guys are doing your zero emission ride and drives and letting people have the opportunity to meet with the different OEMs. And I know you're having really close meetings with AQMD and with the port and making sure things are aligned. So what are you guys doing, right? And a very quick summary, and how can we get folks more engaged? Because at the end of the day, this is really about keeping cargo flowing through California, which has the best infrastructure to do that. Yet we keep losing market share over silly things like this.
You know, on our side, our main thing really is education for people. And part of that education is not only things like the ride and drive and doing grant workshops and webinars on, you know, potential opportunities for incentive funding. It is, you know, our job to make sure people understand what the state is considering, because, you know, you mentioned how do we, you know, scale them back? Is it legislation? Is it, you know, the federal government? There's just more. This is driven more by political expediency than anything else. And really the only time that the ARB any listens to anybody or the state of California for that matter, their mentality, their mantra really is, if you don't like it, sue us. That's basically how it looks. And, you know, to that point that you said about what does this look like in several years from now when the science catches up with the reality, you know, no one is saying that we can't get to a point where we can be comfortable deploying alternative technology. It's more about how we get there and really how many bodies are going to line the side of the road on that journey. And so we really try to help people understand where they fit into this equation and have the conversations with the regulators or the ports or the districts or whomever, so we can understand exactly what's on their minds, which is all pretty simple to decipher at this point in time. Again, this is all about political expediency. It's not about the reality that we're all dealing with on a daily basis. So we'll keep up and continue to try to educate people. It's really the main thing, the main focus we can do, and work with our partners at CTA in trying to look at some sort of larger solution or larger pathway towards some level of relief, because the status quo is not going to cut it. And honestly, the regulators are too lazy to really do this intellectual exercise that gets us to a point where we can have real talk about all of this.
Yeah. And Chris, same thing with the CTA. And it's actually funny because last week, CEO of the American Trucking Association, Chris Spear, testified in front of Congress and literally said, don't let California regulate the entire United States of America, right? And he was talking about multiple things, everything from AB5 to these clean truck programs. But I think the message was very loud, right? Which is, why are we letting the state of California dictate what the United States of America's pathway of goods movement regulation is going to look like?
No, absolutely. And for your audience, you know, the three things that I'd recommend are, number one, when the amendments to this rule come out in March, You know, you can go on the ARB's website, arb.ca.gov, get on the listserv, and when those amendments are released, comment, submit written comments. Just tell the agency how you would or would not be able to integrate this technology into your fleet. April 27th and 28th, consider participating in the hearing. I know that there are some folks who have done so in the past and considered it, you know, maybe not the greatest use of their time. But believe me when I say that voices that do not know your industry, you know, have no concept of what makes the supply chain actually function, they will be there in force and making their voices heard. And so I would highly recommend turning out for April the 27th or 28th. It's going to be on either of those days. You can participate virtually via Zoom, no matter where you are. You don't have to travel to Sacramento. And then finally, I know that there's going to be some post-production on this. So I will send over an email for someone on my staff, Hayden Tallman, htallman@caltrucks.org. If you are interested in learning more about what we are planning to do to push back against some of this, you know, what you could say is unrealistic, infeasible sort of timelines for the deployment of this technology, please do email Hayden. We can provide you some more information about what we're doing. As a preview of that, we did put in the record back in October a letter from legal counsel preparing for litigation. We're still going through those discussions internally about how we're going to proceed. But, you know, as Matt said, this isn't, you know, pushback against the concept of transitioning to zero emissions. We were excited about the technology, think it can work in very specific use cases that allow for overnight charging, and range and weight aren't issues. But to move forward with, you know, the world's fourth largest economy, which is hugely dependent on a functioning goods movement system, and to, you know, basically proceed in a way that the global experts in this technology say that we have no clue how we're going to meet these deadlines is irresponsible at best. And, you know, I'll hold further comment for later. But I mean, it has been something that is, you know, quite frankly, frightening and maddening to be close to when, you know, regulators who are this powerful just stop listening to reality and facts and reason and move forward that are, for reasons that are more political than they are having to do with the environment.
Yeah. And so I think the big message takeaway is your organizations and really the industry as a whole is not saying no to zero emissions. We're saying, how do we get to zero emissions without disrupting the supply chain, which over the last 2 years we all saw was a nightmare for our economy and the global economy. And I think so apropos to quote the Field of Dreams here, but when it comes to infrastructure, if they build it, we will come, right? Build the infrastructure, allow the industry to adjust, make sure that the pieces of the puzzle are in place before we ask the puzzle to be assembled. And, you know, I just think that that's been the message of industry on so many things is, we don't want to be a disruptor to progress, but what we want is a real clear pathway on how progress can be achieved. So with that, I'll go to closing remarks from both of you, and I really appreciate you both coming on. I think there's going to be a follow-up to this in a couple months as we continue to monitor this and get the message out to the constituents. Like I said, the over 35,000 trucks that are on our platform, many of which are here servicing the ports, as well as our shipper customers who are trying to understand how this impacts them and their supply chain. And we haven't even hopped into the AQMD's, you know, facility cap rules on indirect source rules and how they want to regulate trucks and warehouses. So a lot more to talk about here, but, you know, final call to actions, concluding remarks. And since we started with Chris, Matt, I'll start with you and then we'll have Chris close it out.
Well, great. And thanks again, Weston, for the opportunity. You know, HTA is really here to service our members, provide that missing need for those folks who are just too busy trying to run their businesses to understand some of the nuances of either kind of terminal terminal constraints or other operational restrictions or constraints that limit your ability to grow and thrive in this marketplace. And, you know, California is no stranger to regulation, of course, as the trucking industry is, you know, seemingly the lowest hanging fruit that they seem to be repeatedly picking, or just waiting, you know, how long it's going to take them to pick the tree dry, so to speak. And I think having a voice for the trucking industry, both with the HTA and the California Trucking Association, for that matter, here locally is truly important. And if you're doing business here and queuing in and listening to this podcast at this point in time, I think that's a step and a sign that you're pointed in the right direction, that information is the most powerful thing that you can get from this. Understanding what the state is trying to accomplish and putting your voice into the record and how it's going to impact your business and how you understand what the future of your business is going to look like. We're here as a resource. And, you know, not to speak for Chris, but our associations, you know, collectively represent motor carriers of all shapes and sizes. And it's important to understand that while there's not one size that fits all, there are sure a whole lot of pieces, as you alluded to earlier, Weston, that go into this larger puzzle. And the more information that you have about how those pieces fit together and where you fit into that, the more successful you're going to be. So continue that educational pursuit. Please feel free to reach out to us directly at the Harbor Trucking Association. And, you know, reach out to me directly, whether LinkedIn or other social media platforms. And we're always happy to engage and appreciate the opportunity to help hopefully educate some people and get them thinking about things in a little bit different way. Because the regulators sure aren't listening, but, you know, all of us together, right? We hang together or we hang separately. So thanks again, Weston, for the opportunity to chat with your members here.
Yeah. And it's www.harbortruckers.com. And it's matt@harbortruckers.com, right?
So harbortruckers.org, O-R-G, but yep.
.org. Okay. Chris, take us away.
Well, first off, just thank you to Weston and thank you to Cargomatic for the invitation. Glad you didn't go too far from the industry. You know, good to have you in the family still. So, you know, there's an old saying in politics, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And I would just put in another endorsement for there's never been a more important time for truckers and also our shipper partners to have their voices be heard. I know the, you know, you're just out there trying to run your business. You're just out there trying to deliver goods and services to consumers. You just want to be left alone by the government for the most part. And I think many other places in this country are pretty good at doing that. Unfortunately, California is not one of them. As we are all painfully aware of. And, you know, we've had, I'd say, death by a thousand cuts over the last, you know, 10 to 20 years with these regulatory agencies. But we're starting to see things that are industry game changers, things like AB5, things like the warehouse indirect source rule, and none more than this advanced clean fleets rule. This is, as a citizen of the state of California, knowing how the industry works, nothing is going to operate the way that we've come to expect it to operate as consumers, much less the folks who are actually in operations in the industry. And so please do, if you're not a member of Harbor Truckers, if you're not a member of the CTA or ATA, you need to get involved. You need to have your voice be heard. One of the most powerful things that we can do, because elected officials, policymakers, they've got a lot of different priorities that are before them. There's nothing more powerful than our ability to bring your voice directly to your regional officials. We're doing that quite a bit lately, and it's starting to resonate. We need a united industry front on this to really push back against what, you know, again, has been developed in a vacuum. Make your voice be heard. If you need any more information, my email is cshimoda@caltrux.org. Happy to, you know, answer any questions about strategies moving forward. And please do get engaged with your associations, because there's going to be a lot of fights that need to be fought over this next several years.
Thank you guys for joining us. Matt Trapp, CEO of the Harbor Trucking Association, and Chris Shimoda, Senior Vice President of the California Trucking Association. Really appreciate you guys coming on to discuss this. As you said, death by a thousand cuts, but these aren't paper cuts. They're using a chainsaw these days. And the first cut is not the deepest. It seems like this last one will be. So hopefully, you know, cooler heads can prevail. The science rules the day, all the fun things that we like to say, all the cliches, but lots of work to do here. And, you know, again, Cargomatic, proud members of both organizations, as well as the American Trucking Association. So for more information, please reach out to these gentlemen, get involved in their organizations. They're here to fight for you. And if you're looking for a partner that can help keep you moving, put money in your pocket, and help you buy these clean trucks, go to cargomatic.com and sign up to haul for us. With that, I'm Weston Labar, and thanks for joining us again.